Welcome to the Today's Leader podcast. Building tomorrow's best leaders, today.
Way to go, guys. Way to go. Keep it going. Good job, guys. All right, Paul. I see you. All right, John, let's finish. Let's go.
And it's my pleasure to welcome to the Today's Leader podcast, Building Tomorrow's Best Leaders Today, the author of the best-selling book, The Habit Mechanic. Please welcome Dr. John Finn. How are you, John?
Very well, thank you, Tony. Thank you for having me.
And it's a wonderful start to the day for you, and it's the close down of the day for me, of course, different time zones. I love the fact that we can communicate so easily now internationally. I just love the fact. So, John, tell us a little bit about the Dr. John Finn story.
Yeah, so my background, sports psychology. That's where I began my professional career.
Okay.
Sport was something I was always good at, and I was advised to go to university and study something that was going to interest me. So I started studying sport, I studied sports science at university, which included psychology, but also physiology, nutrition, motor control, how we learn to learn. And I had an experience at university where I was playing a selection match for a student international rugby game. And I was the fullback, and I was pretty much stood underneath my own goalposts. The ball was coming down to me very quickly on a wet, cold, windy day in the north of England. I was about 19, and we were playing a men's professional team. And all I was saying to myself was, don't drop the ball, don't drop the ball, don't drop the ball. And you know what, Tony? I didn't even drop the ball. I just completely missed it.
Wow.
You know, a catch I'd taken 1,000 times before. And they scored a try. I got substituted. I didn't get selected. And I was really kicking myself because I was studying sports psychology at the time.
Mm.
And around that time, I'd sustained quite a bad injury. I'd ruptured one of my quad muscles in my right leg, and I was a goal kicker as well. So I couldn't train anymore to the level I needed. So I decided that I was going to make my career about helping other people to be at their best. So I went on to study a master's in sports psychology. I then went to work in professional sport via a consultancy firm called Prozone at the time that helped coaches to use their match analysis technologies. And then I ended up getting employed in a psych capacity in professional football, professional rugby. And then I later did my PhD because I got really interested in why when someone is 18 can they be a world beater, and you know, when they're 22 or 25, no one's prepared to pay them a wage anymore to play professional sport. And that took me on a journey to create the Tougher Minds program, which I then got asked to implement in an educational context and then into a business context. So myself and my team have created what we now call the Habit Mechanic training program that we use across the lifespan. We work with big global businesses. We work a lot in the City of London with those types of businesses. We work in the States as well, from CEO level, C-suite level, all the way through the business. But we also work in education. We work with families, with parents, with teachers. We work with children as young as 10 years old. We work still with elite athletes. So just recently I was doing some leadership development work with LMA, the Premier League football managers in the UK. So we're working in all these contexts, but always using the same science and the same core principles.
I find our mindset fascinating, John. I really do. That concept, and because I'm Australian, some of our American listeners may not get that whole gist of standing under the goalpost waiting for the ball to come down on a wet and miserable day. But I understand it completely because I'm an old league footballer here in Australia. So, but our mind does incredibly dumb things at times, doesn't it? It really does. If we say that we can do something, it's funny how well we can do it. But if we're worried about failing or if we're worried about looking stupid, it's incredible how much of a hindrance that can be.
Yeah, it's a threat detection machine. So it's designed to keep us alive. That's the function of our brain. Homo sapiens have been around for about 300,000 years.
Yeah.
And the main core architecture of our brain hasn't changed in those 300,000 years. We've still got the same brain that we had back then. And it's designed to make us... And when we think about staying alive, we often think about avoiding predators like lions, tigers and bears, or physical confrontations. But actually, one of the things that neuroscience has really highlighted is just how central we're concerned by what other people think about us, so how we're perceived. So we have our ape brain model, which is the alive, perceived, energy brain. So social status is central to us staying alive, because humans are not the biggest, strongest, fastest animals on the planet. So our unique survival advantage has been working together in teams. So you need other people to like you in order to survive. You need other people to like you in order for your genes to survive. So we have this implicit, mindless driver of don't make yourself look stupid in front of other people, other important people. And that's what was driving that self-talk in my head. Don't mess it up. Don't let everyone down. You know, you want to be part of this group.
Yeah. I'm always reminded by that quote that says, I'm not sure who said it now, but you can't lead a cavalry if you think you look stupid on a horse. And it's just so relevant, isn't it? So what led to the habit mechanic?
So I started my education looking really at CBT. That's the backbone of cognitive behavioral therapy. That's the backbone of sports psychology. Yeah. I think in Australia, the UK, America, that seems to be the main science that drives it. But then when I did my master's, I was really fortunate to work with a group of scientists that were getting really interested in the brain and brain function, because at that time, functional MRI scanners had become cheap enough for researchers to buy and to start using to look inside people's brains. And actually, that, for whatever reason, the French government had invested in loads of these functional MRI scanners. So all the papers I was reading about them were from French scientists. So I got really fascinated in the brain and how it is driving our behaviour. You know, when we studied physiology, we were looking at the function of muscles and what they look like at a microbiological level. Yet when we were looking at behaviour, it was always very black box. And then all of a sudden, we could actually see, no, it's the... We can see this thing now, this brain inside our heads, and we're starting to learn more about it. And the more I learned about the brain, and the more I was able to learn from the leading scientists studying this area, the more it's very, very clear from, you know, Daniel Kahneman and everybody else, that most of what we're doing is mindless behavior. We are running on autopilot. And we've heard for a long time in sort of pop psychology books, often written by, you know, really well-intended journalists, that the habit function of human behavior, what we think and do, is maybe about 50%, but it just isn't. It's more like 99%. And we think we're about 98% now, we think, but that's increasing all the time. So we have a predictive brain. It's not taking in conscious information and logically analyzing it. It's predicting and projecting ahead all the time. So we are running on habits.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's really important to help people to understand, because we are in a world where in order to help and change ourselves and to grow as an individual, as a leader, as a team, we are given more knowledge and sometimes more skills. But that doesn't help us to change our behaviour. We run on habits. In the UK, more people than ever before understand and agree with, it's a good idea to eat 5 portions of fruit and vegetables a day. It's a good idea to walk about 10,000 steps a day. Yet the NHS still spends more money than anything else in its, however big its budget is, hundreds of billions, on treating diseases that emerge because people don't eat 5 portions of fruit and veg a day and they don't walk 10,000 steps. We don't do what we know we should do. Yeah. We do what we're in the habit of doing.
Yeah, very much so. Is it as simple as choosing your own autopilot? Because I actually wrote an article about the fact that it's, you know, very similar percentages. The one I read said 99.7 or something. And I just thought that's incredible, you know, subconscious, unconscious behaviours. And so my concept was simply in this article was about choosing our autopilot. You know, there's been a lot of talk about habits. As conscious individuals, as conscious humans, as intentional leaders, we get an opportunity to choose our habits. So is it that simple or is there more to it?
Yeah, so when you say choose your habits, the way I think about that is it's using the willpower, a little bit of consciousness to start making a change. And choosing, deploying willpower is certainly the conduit for making change. But if we want to make sustainable change, build sustainable new habits, we have to tap into behavioral science. And again, behavioral science is a murky world because there's lots of world leading researchers in behavioral science, but it's a big field. And academics are often incentivized to defend their sort of patch of the turf and say, this bit is the most important bit. And I can't see any one leading behavioral scientist that can explain everything about why humans do what they do with their theory, whether it's nudge theory or mindset or something else. So we've taken all those insights over the last 20 years and we've created our own, what we call our 9 action factors model or our 9 success factors model. So if you want to build a new habit, you've got to choose first of all, but you've got to activate these factors. And the thing is, Tony, these factors are always on. They're always working, and often when your habits are not where you want them to be, they're working against you. So we've got to recognize what they are and get them working for us. So habit mechanics are really systematic in how they start to identify the better the habits that will be more helpful for them, but also in how they start to build new ones. And then when you become a chief habit mechanic, in how you help others to build new habits and, you know, create cultures that make it easy to do that.
So you talk about the concept of super habits and you talk about the concept of destructive habits. So I'm presuming destructive habits would be something along the lines of what the majority of the population are in. They're in a bit of a mundane routine world and they get up and they check their phone and they might gobble something down on the run for breakfast on their way to work. And Am I just reading into that too simplistically, or is there something else to it?
Yeah, it's absolutely along the right line. So because we are designed to be so outwardly looking, you know, we're primarily interested in predicting the future. We're not very good at looking at ourselves. We're not wired to do that. If we were, we probably wouldn't be able to think about anything else apart from what we're thinking about. So we've got all these habits that are driving our behaviour. And often when we start to think about our habits, because we're not experts on them, we might what I'm trying to say is essentially there are a lot of habits driving our behaviour every single day, and it's hard to really nail down every single one and what they are. So what I found it's more helpful to do is focus on just particular habits. And we found that certain habits are more impactful than other habits. Some are impactful in a positive direction. We call those super habits. Some are impactful in a negative direction. We call them destructive habits. So a destructive habit might be, I eat too late. Because I eat too late, I'm really hungry, I eat too much. And because I eat too much, I don't sleep very well. And because I don't sleep very well, I wake up the next day, I'm groggy, and I might eat something bad again. I'm not productive that day. I get overly stressed. I don't exercise like I want to. I end up finishing work late again. I eat more than I should do again. So I'm getting in this negative loop. For others, it might be I want to have a glass of wine to relax at the end of the night. That turns into 2 or 3 or the bottle. Again, I don't sleep very well. I feel more stressed the next day. I'm not as productive. If we can start to understand what some of those destructive habits are for us and just work on deconstructing them and replacing them, that goes a long way. The same with super habits. So one of my super habits is I go for a run, the first thing I do every workday. Why do I do that? Because then it's easier for me to eat properly, to be more productive, to sleep better that night. it activates all this other positive behavior. I feel better about myself. So just by doing one small thing, it can activate lots of other helpful habits. So that's what we mean by super and destructive habits.
So where does someone start? So you've mentioned willpower. So what is the starting point for someone who wants to make the most of what they've got, make the most of creating some habits, whether they're super habits or just starting the journey to maybe some good habits? What do you see as a really good, strong starting point for someone to take, or one that can be achieved?
Yeah, so first of all, use your willpower to go buy the book and start reading it, because that's the manual to become a habit mechanic.
Yeah.
It's always about, in the first instance, learning more about yourself and your brain. That's really helpful and it's really empowering.
Yeah.
And then it's about just targeting one small change. And we hear that a lot. But if we can do that in a really intelligent way, if we can analyze ourselves in an intelligent way, we call it intelligent self-watching. And in the habit mechanic, we've got all the self-assessment tools, if you like, to help you to do that. And then if we can start to plan to make change in a helpful way, that's going to be helpful. And again, in the habit mechanic book, we've got all the habit building plans to allow you to do that. Often the first place that people start, and this is actually the first chapter of the book, is called the Daily T Plan. So T is an acronym, stands for Tiny Empowering Action. This takes 2 minutes a day, and it will certainly saves me more than an hour every day. Okay. I think it saves me about 40 hours every month. So what you do is, it's three steps. Yep. You first of all rate yourself on a continuum. How well did you do your best to be your best and achieve your goals yesterday? 10 would mean you were perfect. 1 would mean you failed. Just give yourself a score. Doesn't matter what it is. It's just about recognizing. Step number 2 is you create a tiny empowering action. Just one tiny thing. It could be only check the news once today. It could be go for a 5-minute walk at lunchtime. It could be write a positive reflection at the end of the day. Step 3 is you say why. Why is doing that thing going to be helpful for me? If we only check the news once today, I'll be less distracted, more focused. I'll get to finish work on time, get to spend more time with the family, get to bed on time. So you say the why. So it's about helping people to do more intelligent self-watching. So get out of that habit brain, but then to make intelligent plans using insights from behavioral science. So that's the habit mechanic book. And you know what? I was just getting my coffee in our office before from the lady that serves us coffee. And the habit mechanic book's only been out a few months. And when I first got the books, I was in between meetings and I wanted to grab a coffee. So I took this book down to the, as I was getting a coffee, and the lady said, "Oh, that looks really interesting. What book is that?" I said, "Oh, it's called The Habit Mechanic." She said, "Who wrote that?" I said, "I wrote it." "Did you? Wow, tell me what it's about." So I gave her the book and I just said to her, so this is about 3 months ago, she's a mother, you know, she's a hardworking lady. She manages a few people. And I said, "Are you a habit mechanic yet?" And she said, "Honestly, your book has changed my life."
Oh, wow.
And this isn't unique. We hear this all the time. And that isn't me coaching her. It's not me giving any instructions. It's just in the book. Because we've written the book. It's everything I know about this area is in that book, in a structured, it's a manual for life. Yeah. So what we, to come back to the question, it's about starting really small. And that's all she's just picked a few tiny super habits to work on. And she's seen how that's impacting every element of her life. You know, not just home or work, everything.
That's amazing. That's awesome. That's an impact that you probably wouldn't have expected to have that potential impact from someone that is part of your routine day, I guess. I would love to have that sort of level of feedback just on sharing some of the stuff that I share around. That's awesome. How do leaders use the habit mechanic? So if I'm a leader and I'm listening to this and I want to be part of the group of tomorrow's best leaders and I really want to develop myself, how can utilizing some of these principles or plans or, you know, what you've outlined in the book, how can that help me be a better leader?
Yeah, so the book's broken into four sections. The final section is all about how to become a chief habit mechanic. And that's an outstanding leader in the modern world. And once you've become a habit mechanic, you can then start to think about how can I use these insights to help my people to be at their best and create a culture that makes it easy for them to build really good habits. I'm just writing an article for Forbes at the moment about, you know, the challenges of the hybrid workplace. And the word culture, as I'm sure you know, Tony, comes from Latin and it just means to cultivate. So we can think of a farmer cultivating their crops, and the basics of that is getting the soil right, getting the weather conditions right, or picking the right weather conditions for the crops to grow. We use the word culture for people as well. So it's about cultivating human behavior, or in other words, cultivating habits. So what we teach leaders how to do is how to use the behavioral science, not only to help them be at their best, but to create a culture where their workforce can be agile, where their workforce can be at their best. And I see this as being more important than ever before because of the volume of change every business is having to go through. And I think there's a huge barrier right now, certainly in lots of the people we're working with, is that their workforces are tired. They've developed lots of what I call anti-change habits during the pandemic, where they're busy, busy, busy. They don't feel they have time to step back and reflect and to work on more strategic things and to work on developing and taking the business where it needs to go next and incorporating the new technologies. And when you can start to give senior leaders in a business the behavioral science insights, it just really supercharges change and growth and allows them to beat the competition, to be frank, because I really see it a bit like sports science transformed professional sport fitness levels, probably starting about 20 years ago. I see behavioral science now as the next frontier for human performance. And I don't see many people being able to implement it like chief habit mechanics can. In fact, I'd say I don't see anyone being able to implement like chief habit mechanics can. So it's really exciting, the work that we're doing in that space. But it's all in the book. It's in the habit mechanic book.
Absolutely. It sounds fascinating. I'm going to have to grab a copy. And it's remiss of me that I didn't grab a copy prior to our conversation, because it sounds exactly what leaders are wanting, something that they can use to benefit themselves internally and to help them be better and more effective, but also then to be able to share that. And I like that term, chief habit mechanic. So maybe that's part of the makeup of what we're looking for our best leaders should be becoming chief habit makers or mechanics to help their teams benefit and be more effective. So, John, who's been your biggest influence through your career?
Yeah, I've been lucky to have a number of great inspirational leaders on my journey. I've had the opportunity to work with some world-class coaches in, you know, football and cricket and rugby and things. People that are world-class academics who've mentored and guided me. But I think the one that's maybe primed my best behaviours is my father. I think my father's a good leadership role model. He grew his own business literally from nothing. And he always led from the front. And although he might not be a perfect chief habit mechanic, because he's maybe managing change wasn't so important when he was doing his leadership, he certainly, I think, gets the number one thing right that is most important for any leader, and that is to, you know, show up and work hard and really lead from the front and doing everything he expects everyone else, or expected everybody else in his business to be doing. You know, so I was lucky, and I don't know if I was lucky or unlucky, but I was working with my dad from maybe about 13 years old, you know, not full time, but going away to work with him on the building sites and all that kind of stuff. So I was exposed to that from a very early age, you know, working your 12-hour days and all this kind of stuff. And that's, I think that's certainly something that's been really helpful in my career, in helping me to achieve what I've achieved so far, and, you know, help other people to be at their best.
Very much so. The concept of role modelling is just so important for leaders to embrace and understand that whether we like it or not, you're a role model. So you can either be a role model in a very positive sense, or you can be a role model of what not to do. So, you know, the amount of people I speak to, and we learn from every leader that we've had, sometimes we learn what not to do. So it's positive to be a role model, and you need to be thinking about how can I be the best leader and the best role model overall. So I think I'm going to know this particular answer, but how do you what's your relationship like with failure?
Perpetual. I think it has to be good, because without failure, you can't improve, you know. I think Winston Churchill said, success is not final and failure is not fatal. So
yeah,
increasingly, you're going to fail because the world is changing at such a pace. You can't know all the answers. And what you're doing today isn't going to get you to where you need to be next year because the world's changing. So I think my relationship with failure is better than ever before because I understand the importance of it and how to manage it, my thinking processes through it, and how to you know, reframe it. My PhD is in emotional regulation in challenging transitions for elite in the population of elite athletes. But so I've spent quite a lot of time thinking about how to reframe and regulate failure.
Mm.
And everything I know about that, again, is in the book, in the stress management and confidence building chapters.
Excellent. What about the vision? What's your vision for the future? Where do you now take the book and what it is that you're doing with the Habit Mechanic? What's next, and where does this thing lead to?
Well, my mission is to help people to be at their best. And as a team, we want to democratize really powerful and effective self-help, coaching, leadership development. So we've created the book as the platform. This is the Bible. It's the guide. It's everything that you're going to need from a knowledge and skills perspective. Very shortly, we're releasing our app, which is the Habit Mechanic University, where is a place where we can get together as a community and we can support each other. And then we want that to be central in businesses so that they can support their people in terms of building better habits. So it's really about, we've got the knowledge and the skills in place. We've tried and tested that. We've got over 10,000 people using those ideas, telling us how powerful they are. It's now getting better at activating the other elements of behavioral science to make it as easy as possible for people to build small, new, sustainable, helpful habits. And I think that is going to be the currency, increasingly, of being successful in the modern world. Whatever you're doing, whether you're at school, whether you want to be a great athlete, whether you want to be a great leader, whether you want to be a great parent, we're going to have to get better at building new sustainable helpful habits. So we want to make it as easy as possible for people to do that.
Excellent. How can people connect with you, and more importantly, where can they get the book?
Yeah, so the book's available at all major online stores, including Amazon. And if you go to our website, which is tougherminds.co.uk, there are loads of free resources that you can check out on there. But yeah, if you're interested in this, get the book. The book's got thousands of pounds worth of training in it, you know. It's not a normal book. I got really fed up with reading books that just were either a sell-through or just told you about a problem but no solution.
Yeah.
This is an end-to-end training program. It's not a book you read once. It's a manual for life. And even if you don't have a lot of time right now, it's structured in a way where you just pick it up, you flick to the bit you're interested in, being more productive, managing stress better, being a better leader, and you can learn some things in 5 or 10 minutes to start putting into practice straight away. It's not just for an individual. We've got our clients literally buying everyone in the business this book, because it's going to be the foundation of how they start approaching the new way of working in the hybrid world, because you can build everything on top of this.
Sounds excellent. So we'll make sure those links are in the show notes, John. So, John, thank you for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you, and thank you for investing in today's leaders.
Well, thank you, Tony, and thank you to everyone for listening.